You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Oh yeah! Episode lucky number 13 of Flying the Call, Candid Conversations on Music, is here. I'm recording this Wednesday morning, so I'll keep it quick. Today's guest is Ryland of Origami Angel. You know them, you love them, you're a card-carrying member of the Gami Gang. After a great split with Commander Salamander earlier this year on a Pokemon-themed EP, the band whipped this sector of the internet into a frenzy with the rollout of their debut album, Somewhere City, and of course the music itself. Their airy energy mixed with blast beats and breakdowns quickly shot Origami Angel toward the top of many year-end lists, so please enjoy. I mean, how were all the record release shows and stuff?
Oh, the release shows were perfect. They were so awesome. Luckily enough, we got to do them pretty much all at like homies' houses and places we've been before, or people who we've like done shows with before. And like every single gig, we had really great friends on.
Awesome.
And it was just, yeah, I don't know. It was a really great experience. Like the first one was in Philly the day the record came out, and like there's people singing along to the thing that came out like, you know, less than 24 hours ago. So it was, I don't know, it was a really insane feeling. And it was just way like especially cool because we were doing it with friends in such an intimate environment, three house shows. Really fun.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, speaking of like the live show, like I've heard they're kind of, they get pretty crazy. I haven't been able to catch one yet, but like, can you tell me a little bit more about like what your kind of like live presence is like?
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. We tend to play, you know, pretty fast. Not yet. We get it really excited. It's a thing. I don't know. We do some cool stuff. Like we've been opening up with an extended intro to the song 24 Hour Drive Through. We do like kind of this like metal thing that leads into it, which is really fun. And luckily enough, like just the shows that we've played and the people that come to our shows, just, if they do know us, sometimes even if they don't, they come with an energy that is kind of ready to just, you know, be like dancey and moshy and stuff like that. It's a ton of fun to play. We play pretty loud, I've been told. I run through three amps, so that's a lot of fun. Because it's just the two of us. Just me and Pat. And I don't know. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to find the right words to describe it. It's a great time live. We really have a lot of fun. Just like, I don't know. That's been like the main goal of this band, is just to write music that we think is really fun and that we like to play on stage and like to play for friends and for people who can reciprocate that energy. I don't know. It's a great time.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I've seen like a couple references to you doing like battle sets with Commander Salamander. I can kind of imagine what that's like, but can you tell me like a little bit more about that?
Yeah. Okay. So we've done it twice now. One time we did them both at DIY Fest. One was at Deep Sea Fest 2, which is our friend Sammy from the band Sammy Heck. She runs a label called Deep Sea, and she basically puts on a fest. She did it last year and she did it this year too, where all the people and like homies that she's worked with played this one venue in Fallston, Maryland, which is like kind of close to Baltimore. But it's very rural. We played an outdoor gig for Deep Sea Fest 2. And it was an all day thing. Really cool. But that's the first time us and Commander Salamander ever played a battle set. And then we also did one at DIY Prom in September. That was in Bowling Green, Ohio at Howard's Club. That's like the same. I don't know if you've seen like the Focella, like Summit stuff. It's those people that run those amazing fests, and that's so cool too. Basically, like in the battle set, we tend to, well, yeah, we do. We trade songs back and forth. We usually open up with rock, paper, scissors to see who goes first. And it's really fun. It's like the next step of like a higher level energy show, especially because we're such good friends with them. Like we hang out all the time. It's kind of like, you know, as soon as one song ends from Origami Angel, Commander Salamander immediately picks it up, and there's not like a crazy delay songs, so it's just like a nonstop like energy blast, and it's a lot of fun too. Because if you like both bands and are familiar with them, it's just like kind of cool to be able to get two things right back to back instead of when you'd regularly it would be displayed as like all of the Origami Angel songs, now all the Commander Salamander songs. So it's really fun. It always ends up being way more high energy than a regular show because like Liam, the drummer for Commander Salamander, will always just like snatch the mic and start doing vocals for the song Effective Power, which is really cool. That's a super fun thing to do too. And hopefully we can do that some more with that band. I couldn't really see us doing it with anybody else just because like they've been homies for so long.
Yeah, it definitely seems like you guys have like that cool relationship going on. I think a few years ago, like on Warped Tour or something, Silverstein and Beartooth did kind of a similar thing. That I think they called it Silvertooth. I think it was like them all, mostly all of them, like playing all of each other's songs together. But both of those seem like really cool like experiences.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, definitely. Like I've heard a lot of like screamo bands do battle sets all the time, and it's not crazy common in like emo pop punk, emo punk communities. But I remember we saw the band Morning Dew, they're from Falston, and this other band called Some Mess, so they're also from Falston, at that venue, Grateful Acres. They did a battle set once, and then we kind of like fantasized about the idea forever, and then it finally happened. It was so awesome.
Yeah, that's rad. And then I mean I saw like a couple mentions of you saying that kind of like the Obsessives as a two-piece were kind of a big inspiration for like showing you and Pat that, you know, you could do a band as a two-piece. I saw them only that way only once, but it was definitely like a really cool kind of like special thing for sure. Can you talk a little bit about like that kind of influence and like just kind of the whole idea of starting a band as a two-piece?
Yeah, for sure. Being from the DC area, the Obsessives were always playing sick ass shows, and they were a two-piece for the majority of that time. And yeah, I would see them live and just be blown away. Like, why is this band of two people the biggest, you know, like the biggest sounding thing I've ever heard? You know, why is this band of two people sound like 10 times louder and 10 times more full than some bands of like five or six people that I've seen? I was just so mesmerized by the way that Nick could split the guitar tone like that, and just how much of a great drummer Jackson was. And it was just, I don't know, it was like a transcendent experience for me, being like, I never thought that that's allowed, you know, from the first times I saw them. And they kept getting better, and they just kept making it even greater and greater. And I remember one time me and Pat saw them, I think like August 2016, it was like one of the last shows that they played in the DC area as a two-piece, and they completely just like blew the roof off of that house. It was insane. And then me and Pat were there. It was the first time we both saw them at the same time. And then like after that show, we were like, we need to do that. Like, we need to be a two-piece. We need to start a two-piece band. Because me and Pat were in a band before that broke up, like right before that. And it kind of just came around at the right time. And we were like, all right, time to make this happen. Like, we're gonna try to do this. So I have spent a lot of my journey through like GAMI and stuff like that, figuring out how on my part to write like for a two-piece band, and how to perform that live, and just how I'm going to do that with my rig. And that's expanded a ton from like when we started first playing shows, my board being about the size of like a small book, and now it's like a spaceship. So like that's just been something that I've consistently tried to make better, and it was pretty inspired by that band. And then some other two-piece bands I really liked were like Two Nights and Giraffes. And we all liked all three of those bands, and it was kind of like there's something very endearing about just two people, percussion and all the melodic stuff on a stage doing it. And it's like, it's always just got this underdog feeling. And then from like Pat's side of it, it's just like, he has so much more that he can do as a drummer, you know? And we're allowed to take a lot of liberties in the songwriting because it's just us two, and we can kind of have that tightness of just being two people on stage. And I don't know, it's a more focused thing, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun. It's great. And I don't think that we would have ever been able to have the idea if it wasn't for the OBS kind of kicking that off in our brains.
Yeah, I think it's really cool that it kind of that came from a place of you being inspired by these other two-piece bands rather than just like only because like, oh, like it's so hard having four people all together at once. So let's just like me and you are more the kind of most dependable among us. It's cool that you like had that inspiration and kind of came into it with that goal in mind. And I feel like that also the kind of dynamics between you two really allows the drums and like percussion to be able to kind of shine. And like you said, kind of take over a lot of, or like play different parts than, you know, would kind of be in a typical band where the drums are kind of more in the back. And there's also kind of like a really rhythmic style to your guitar and even your vocals in some songs.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about like that relationship between the instrumentation and everything?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's been pointed out to me a couple of times. And before, someone pointed out to me at a show a couple of years ago, like how, like the way that I played guitar with like, even with the melodies is pretty rhythmic and like very, rhythm based. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just something in my mind that's like, when it comes to writing music, it's like, I think in terms of rhythm way more than I do of melody, and melody kind of comes after, and often they come together, but I think it's like the rhythm that's really the defining thing for my brain. Mm-hmm. As to what is catchy or what is, you know, what's good, what's a cool riff. So I think that that has just like made its way into my brain as a guitarist and a vocalist of that. I think it probably comes from being in a rhythm section in jazz band, like through high school and college. Well, mm-hmm. I was in college for a year, but I was in jazz band. It was cool. And I learned a lot of like rhythm technique from that I think kind of became the foundation for where I took the like writing material of this band. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of cool. Like the things that I like the most in music are often those rhythmic interplays between guitars and drums, and often sometimes guitars, drums, and vocals all together. Mm-hmm. It's weird, but the band that I've been citing as an influence for that for a while has been Chunk No Captain Chunk. I don't know how familiar you are with them or like Easy Core or anything, but I always really admired the way that they would do rhythms like that were pretty much, they were like breakdown based rhythms, but they would end up being in like the verse of a song, you know? It'd be like a breakdown with a very aggressive, choppy guitar and drum syncopated breakdown, but they would also just sing over top of that, and it just made everything all the more catchy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. It kind of like adds like that extra kind of intensity to the vocals too.
Yeah, definitely. Having that rhythmic, like that backup, like the rhythm and the vocals together. Yeah, that's basically the nail on the head. It's like, it adds a little level of intensity that in like more traditional, just like straight up, straight down the middle type of stuff. It's not that it lacks. It's just, it's an extra level, you know, that I think is cool to get to. And I think that just probably comes from the two-piece nature of the band. It's just more rhythm stuff that I have to provide with guitar and vocals.
Yeah, I mean, do you feel like you're kind of making up for the like missing quote-unquote instruments, or is it more like just kind of that's how things come together?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think in the beginning it was more of a making up for, like when I was writing music like off of her first couple EPs, like Quiet Hours and Doing the Most, it was like, how could I do this without you know, without a second guitarist on stage or without a bassist? Like, how am I going to make this come from just my guitar? And I think it probably, like, just doing that so much just kind of became ingrained with the way that I think about writing Origami Angel songs. The way that I write music is, like, kind of paired with that now, to be, like, I don't know. I think with the writing of this record, I really honed in on, like, the way that I could do that from a guitarist standpoint. And just making it more of a part of my writing instead of a part that comes after, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I'm curious, like, do you think it's kind of changed your brain enough that it'd be kind of hard for you to go back to a more kind of like four-piece band?
I definitely think so. Me and Pat were talking about that the other day. It's just like, I don't really know what would happen if we tried to play, or if like either of us had tried to play. Like Pat, I guess Pat was telling me about some experiences with his friends, like, and he'll do like blues jams and stuff like that, and just like how weird it is to play with different guitarists now after being like accustomed to our style. Mm-hmm. And like I've jammed with some of the guys in Commander Salamander before, and like even like Liam is such a fantastic drummer, but like I can definitely tell, like, when I'm playing guitar, like, how different it is than playing guitar for Origami Angel in our two-piece fashion in the way that it is. And it's, yeah, I haven't really tried to write anything for any other projects, but I could definitely tell that it would be pretty hard to distinguish that style of playing from another thing that I would write, you know?
Yeah, definitely. That makes sense. And you had mentioned earlier, like, the high energy of your sets. And I feel like that really shines through, especially on the new album. There's kind of like sometimes even like a frantic feeling where it almost feels like you're about to kind of like go off the tracks, like in like the bridge in 24-hour drive through or like the outro of 666 Flags.
Right.
I guess, can you just tell me a little bit about that and kind of how you do kind of keep it together?
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, it helps, like, Pat is like an absolute rock behind the kit. Like when it comes to just keeping shit like in line, you know, just, I don't know. It's really easy to play with Pat because he has such a, like when it comes to doing fast stuff like that and blast beats and like at the end of 666 Flags or any sort of weird beat that's also heavy, like in 24-hour drive through, like the bridge. He's just so good at making that feel natural and making it feel not rushed. And it's just like, for me, I'm just following what he's doing because he can do it so well. You know, when it comes to blast beats and like with how strong his like left hand is, I can feel like every note and it's just like, okay, as long as I can feel this pocket, I'm good. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. He just lays down the foundation for all that stuff. And it's really great. And then for my part, I kind of, for stuff like that, I'll always think like, what if we did, you know, some blast beats here? And he'll be like, oh, like this. And he'll just play something absolutely ridiculous. And I'll be like, yeah, exactly like that. And then I'll just come up with a way to do it. But I guess, like, as far as not flying off the rails, just the amount that we've practiced, just the two of us, like, to make sure that we were okay with those parts definitely helped a lot. Yeah. I don't know. It's crazy. I try not to think about it. That's the key. I'll be like, oh no, this is impossible. Just try to go like a brain neutral moment.
Yeah, I can definitely imagine, especially at like during the live show, like getting kind of like caught in your head with like the tempo and stuff. Like when I used to play Guitar Hero all the time, the hardest parts for me would always be like the super fast strumming. So I feel like I would definitely be especially in my head for during those parts.
Yeah, I usually just try to zone out. And then like if people are having a great time, if people are like moshing around and dancing, I'll just be like, okay, I can do that too. And it'll probably sound all right, you know?
For sure. Yeah. It's just nice to have that kind of like flexibility, especially since you bring such a high energy and like have that like funness, you're able to be kind of a little bit loose in some ways.
Yeah, definitely.
And so I read that like you've had the idea for like Somewhere City for kind of like close to 2 years, and that it was like originally going to be an EP before you were like convinced to make it an LP. How did like the original idea kind of come about, and like would you call it a concept record?
Yeah. Okay. So definitely I've always kind of wanted to do a theme, like a location based theme, you know? I've always just been obsessed with the more like the higher arching theme of escapism and like how it is just presented, especially like in culture right now. I think like everything is a form of escapism, whether it's like memes or Marvel movies or, you know, anything like that, and any video game or sort of that. And I think our music has always kind of touched on that and spoken to that. But I remember sitting one night and thinking about an idea for an EP where the whole thing is location based and the whole thing is just about like different perspectives towards that escape, I guess. And just the comfortness, like the comforting factor that would be like able to be explored within an album like that. And I like you said, I did originally have the idea for an EP and I was pitching around to people, and this was a while back, so I don't think anybody took me seriously. But then I remember I wrote the riff. So I had some of the songs, like the beginning of Say Less, the part where it's just guitar and vocals and stuff like that, and where it cuts in and it's like a little dancey riff. I had everything but the chorus for that in about like this time of the year, 2017. And that was like one of the first things I had written for the record. I knew that I wanted to have that be on a thing. I don't know. It was a little weird. But I think it was around last February. I sent Lex from Chatterbot. She's also our manager. I sent her the beginning riff of Welcome To. And I was like, I sent it on a voice memo, or it might have even been a video of me singing it and just playing it, no drums, but with an electric guitar and all that. And I was like, hey, thought this would be a really cool thing for like the first song on an EP called Somewhere City. And it would be a concept record about, or a concept EP about, you know, a city and location about themes of escape. And I sent that at like 4 o'clock in the morning, and I woke up at 8 to Lex being like, Ryland, you need to wake up right now. Ryland, you need to wake up. You need to, and then like just pitched this idea to me about like, take this, make it an LP. It'll be so fucking sick. And I was like, okay, you know, Lex usually know what's good. So there were some other projects that we had developing after that. Well, that idea kind of stayed in my head as, this is what I want the concept to be. This is what I want our themes to be. And then as I developed songs, just trying to fit like those parts into the LP and see where we could go from that. As far as a concept record, I definitely think it is a loose concept album. And when I say loose end concept, I don't know, it's weird. It's a concept album that doesn't necessarily have to be tied to the concept. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, sure. It's a little more, I would say it's not as thorough as certain concept records have been in the past. In terms of the one dialogue, whereas it's more like, there's a couple different points of view there that we discuss, like 4 or 5 that I think are all sort of different angles of the same end goal, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
For example, the song Escape Rope for me is, it's the beginning of side two of the record. And it's sort of like, it's definitely the most negative song on the record. And it sounds like almost petty at points. And that transitions right into the title track, which is one of the more overwhelmingly positive songs on the record. And then the record kind of ends positively from that note. Escape Rope is a point of view where it's like from an outsider, I think, like someone who might not understand what a certain person is going through on the first side of the record, or understand a lot of the dialogue, and kind of is upset at someone for leaving, or upset at someone for embarking on their own journey, which I think is just as valid of a narrative to sort of explore as one where we are just talking about the journey itself. That was one that really fascinated me. It's one of the last 3 songs, I think, on the record that I wrote was Escape Rope. And I remember writing, and I was like, I'm kind of getting tired of this one narrative that we're exploring. I kind of want to explore the opposite of it and see how far we can get with that. That one is definitely the most different, but it still serves a purpose to the overall angle of the record, I guess. So it's weird when the word concept record starts to get thrown around, because it's definitely not a rock opera. You know, it's no like no Tommy. It's not as I'd say it's not as thorough as, for example, like Cosmic Thrill Seekers that came out this year. Like, that's such a good concept album that is devoted to its narrative, and how solid that is and how solid they pulled it off is so amazing. And it's I don't think we could have done something as thorough as that with the record that we wrote. Ours is definitely a little more not as tied down to that one concept. But still a theme. I don't know. It's a theme record, maybe. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I was kind of going to say something like that, where it's like, it's not like a record where it's just like 10 songs, but it's also not just like one story. It's kind of like in between, like exploring that theme, like you said.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's kind of what the whole city idea is too. It's just like, a city is not just going to be one type of person and one type of dialogue and one type of journey. It's going to be filled with thousands of them, really. Of all different people, all different stories, all different backgrounds. And I think that the songs are more of they're more individual viewpoints in that community of songs, if that makes sense.
For sure. Yeah. And how was it for you, like, exploring those different viewpoints? Was it kind of like you working through things on personal things on your own, or was it more like, okay, let me look at this from how a different person could see it?
Definitely a little bit of both, but more so just working through certain things on my own. Like, there are definitely moments of the album where, like, for example, like the song 666 Flags, is a super goofy song, but it also has some of the more realer lyrics on the album, I think. And that's sort of, I wrote that song near the beginning of writing this record, actually. And it was sort of like that song in a way is me realizing what I wanted the rest of the album to be about. In that last like cadence of the vocals of the, it's only two more seconds. All these microscopic moments help me feel like I'm not helpless, is sort of where in my life I decided how I wanted to turn this album around, you know, how I wanted to turn myself around and like just keep improving certain things in my life. And that song is very representative of that. The verse is kind of goofy though. The verse was definitely, my little brother asked how much roller coasters cost. And I was like, that would be an awesome song lyric.
Nice.
And then it kind of, you know, worked with the way that we were going with things. So there's songs like that are definitely a direct personal narrative of my own, and same with like Skeleton Key and Throne, or Find Your Throne, sorry, we changed that. I'll Find Your Throne. I keep saying Throne, people are like, don't you mean Find Your Throne? And I'll be like, come on, I wrote it. Not actually. Yeah, Find Your Throne is definitely more like that. The Air Up Here is definitely a song that I wrote from a perspective of like feeling more at home in my DIY community, feeling more embraced by the people around me and the friends that I've made, and kind of just like it's like a farewell letter to like all the things that I don't know that have held me back, you know. And not to sound so negative like that, not held me back, but all the things that were inadequate maybe in my life. I don't know. It's difficult. It's difficult to think about this stuff like that now that it's out. But yeah, there are definitely songs where I would think about things from a different perspective and write them. Like I think Escape Rope was definitely the one that is most like that, where I was not feeling that way when I wrote it, but I was trying to imagine someone feeling that way. Yeah. Sort of like that. I don't know. That's a lot of stuff I just said. I'm sorry I didn't answer that as poetically as I could have.
Oh, no, it's all good. It makes a lot of sense for sure. And like a couple of the things that you kind of hit on in there are like the mix between like the serious and the kind of more jokey stuff, and also kind of like the mix between, you know, like the stereotypical like emo being like sad, depressing music, and like Somewhere City as a whole being like a very positive album. How do you kind of like balance those, both of those sides of the band?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And I've been realizing that it is, you know, definitely a balance between those different elements. And I don't even necessarily think it was all super intentional, other than I think that's just how we are as people, you know? Like, I think as a person writing this music lyrically, I have a ton of different emotions of anxiety, of sadness, of happiness, definitely at points, and of positivity, and more so just like a love for the people around me, and wanting to see those people do great, and wanting to see myself do great and better in my life, and just kind of how that all comes together in one song is sort of the journey that Somewhere City goes through. I think as far as like the balances that we take like intentionally, definitely has to do with like the track list, and like where we want certain songs to be is definitely like how we try to help balance that. You know, we'll start with like a Welcome To, which is obviously the introduction to the album and tries to get people familiar with the concept. And then we go straight into 24 Hour Drive Through, which is a friendship, you know, anthem sort of. It's a song about, you know, homies and eating fast food and goofy stuff like that, but while at the same time trying to talk about, you know, like the mental health of the others around you and just like how important it is that you're looking out for the people that you love, you know.
For sure.
and going from that more into the 666 Flags direction is kind of like that internal dialogue of like, I don't know, that one is very much like, an, like I said, like an internal dialogue of myself where it's like, there's all this goofy shit happening, but then at the same time, there's a lot more serious stuff underneath the, underneath, what would you say? Underneath the surface. I don't know why I couldn't think of the word surface. yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's weird. I think that's just how I think as a human being. It's how Pat thinks. It's how we are, I guess. I think it's how people are.
For sure. Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's definitely like that duality in a lot of people. And as sort of like a process of like a journey from kind of like one to the other and like all of the in-between area as well, it makes sense that there's kind of that, like I said, like duality, I guess.
Definitely. Yeah, I think what's really... What was I about to say? Damn. Oh, I was gonna say like, have you watched the Paul Rudd Hot Ones interview?
No, I haven't.
It's the one they made a meme about where he's like, I don't know. You know the show though, like where they eat the hot wings and stuff.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like the Paul Rudd one. He's talking about how like the things that he finds funniest, like in cinema, are like typically drama movies that have like some of the funniest moments that he thinks of, and then there are more serious movies, or there are more like funny movies, more comedic movies that end up having more serious tones than some of the most saddest things that he's ever seen too. You see, that's just what he said about it. And I was thinking about this record and like certain songs that we've written in that certain way. Like, I think that's just like a thing that's common among a lot of people, is that some of the most like funny things end up having the saddest overtones and vice versa. I don't know. It's just, it's fucked, really. Like, I think, like, I don't know. Feelings are weird as hell. That's basically what I'm about to say.
For sure. I feel you. And kind of, like, jumping off, like, that sort of balance, I'm curious about, like, this Somewhere City is kind of the most, I feel like, layered Origami Angel stuff so far. So how do you kind of balance... like the studio magic, being able to add, you know, bass and other additional instruments with being able to replicate it live, and also kind of like the airier aspects of the band with the kind of like blast beats, breakdowns and stuff.
Definitely. Yeah. Most of that has come from like just me like advancing my rig and my pedal board and stuff like that. So kind of to make up for like a double tracked guitar feel on the record, of having like two guitarists playing similar things or even the same thing, which is how the record is recorded for the most part, double tracked guitars and just a fuller sound from that. I use two guitar amps mainly that there's this thing, I have a pedal called the Mimic, which is like an automatic double tracking pedal, which creates a stereo field between the two guitar amps, which is kind of sick because it lets me be louder, but also have a little more air and width to the sound. And I also can like turn that on and off at will. So like it could be just one amp or two amps, like to like when that other guitar would come in, which is a lot of fun. And then the other amp that I use is a bass amp, which I'm sending another signal to that has like more low end and like octave down stuff to help with a bassist. And it's definitely like, it gets us there live. Like that plus the energy helps us mimic the record. And as far as like, yeah, blast beats and stuff like that, I just got like some cool distortion pedals that help us be loud. And Pat just goes ham all the time. always helps.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, it's so interesting to me to like hear about all the different gear, even though it's like also totally like way over my head, because I have no idea about any of that stuff. And you had mentioned in the like one like equals one fact about the album thread, which you still owe, I believe, like 390 facts, by the way.
Yeah, that got a little out of hand.
You had mentioned that Gen 3 was kind of like a prequel to Somewhere Cities in some way. I was curious, could you like expand on that a little bit?
Definitely. Well, so there are certain like callbacks that were definitely like planned intentionally, like from the like previous to the release of both records. So like to me, there are certain character elements of Gen 3. So like Ruby, that definitely appears in Somewhere City, like that character and that like that mindset. And then Sapphire, the chorus, has the maybe we should go back to where we know that you'll never be sad and you'll always be happy there, which is a direct reference to Somewhere City. Mm-hmm. And then Emerald is kind of, I've always looked at as like the way that certain songs have their attitudes. It's like Emerald is another character, and the voice from Emerald is completely different than that of Sapphire or Ruby's. And that voice is apparent on a couple of the tracks too. I'm curious to see if anybody has like picked up on that stuff. but it's definitely, it makes sense to me. So hopefully it makes sense to other people. And then XD is kind of like, I don't know, XD kind of, to me, is like the anthem of Somewhere City, even though it's not on that album. It's like, that's like a postlude. It's like a PS. to the record, it's like an actualized thing, and it's like a very cocky song and very goofy and funny, which I think is just like a, I don't know, I think there's a lot of elements on Gen 3 that were kind of warming people up to the idea of Somewhere City. And I like to say it worked. I think it's pretty cool. I think that the record definitely makes sense following Gen 3, and I think that the themes are expanded upon a little bit, and that those voices still remain in our music. And that's something that I've always been interested in, is creating like an ongoing narrative, like across releases, is a lot of fun for me.
Yeah. I mean, it is really interesting. And like, I'm curious, like how, since you had like the idea for Somewhere City, like so relatively long ago, how was it kind of like planning and like working on like these like multiple parts at the same time?
It was a lot of fun, actually. Just and it was really cool compared to like how we had done EPs previous to Gen 3 and Somewhere City, is just like looking at a bigger picture while both of these things are happening at the same time kind of allowed us to have these cooler things in the rollout, you know, like I said earlier, like ties into the previous records, and just like how we could expand on the universe that we created with Gen 3. It's definitely like planning both of those things at the same time and seeing what is working and seeing what isn't working, and kind of just all the behind the scenes stuff that we've got to do with Gen 3 just ended up making Somewhere City a lot better and like a lot funner for people, I think. Yeah, I guess that's what I'm trying to say, is that we definitely have had a really like neat time being able to plan both of this stuff around the same time. It also cool because it gave us a lot more time to sort of fully digest what we were going to do with Somewhere City and how we wanted this rollout to go.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I was like, I kind of hopped on the Origami Angel train when with Gen 3, and I definitely wasn't expecting like a full length coming this year. So it was like really like, I was super surprised when like the whole Somewhere City website and stuff dropped. And I think it's just like been, it was so cool to watch. Like, I wasn't super involved in like, you know, the like nitty gritty details of like the scavenger hunting for the leaks and stuff, but it was super cool even just from like kind of once removed perspective to see how like invested in it people were, and the band as well, just like how many little, especially once the album was out, like seeing all the little references and stuff that went into the site that were kind of like hidden in plain sight. Can you talk a little bit about like the planning stages of that and the rollout and just kind of like the hype around it and the, I guess, like significance of like the fan base, like the I feel like the Gami gang is like kind of taking over the world in a way.
Definitely. Yeah. So planning it was a lot of back and forth between me and Lex from Chatterbot, who, like I said earlier, she's our manager. And she planned this whole rollout. She's definitely like the project manager of Somewhere City. So I don't know. She just kept coming with these really sweet ideas. And then we would talk on the phone for like hours of how to keep expanding on this and what exactly we're going to do. And with her, she's just so committed to making a rollout complete. And she's just so good at flushing those ideas out and just little things that I'll say, like even if they might've been a joke, just turning them into full-blown ideas and just turn them into full-blown ways that we can present an album and build hype. And that's just what she's done. And luckily for us with that, she's helped us cultivate a group of people who support us and who will be down to do stuff like do the ARG to find the song, or you know, find things that are hidden on the website, like just in plain sight, like you said, which is it's pretty amazing to me. I never thought that someone would care about Gami that much to even really click on the website, but the amount of support that we're getting through that, like the rollout and hyping the album up, is still super incredible to me. Like every day, like, I don't know. It's crazy to see how it continues going, and I'm just ready to wake up one day and have it all be a dream, but it's pretty ridiculous. How well Lex has planned that stuff out. I don't know. It still baffles me how committed she was to this release and just how committed she is to our band as a whole, really. Like, we love working with her. We've been working with her since our first EP. We've been on Chatterbox since day one, which is really cool and amazing to work with friends like that for such a long time.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely sounds like that, like, special relationship, especially like you saying, like, you kind of making an offhanded comment and her remembering that and turning it into like this integral part of the rollout. Like, that's so cool to see. And I'm curious, like, how much of this was kind of the rollout was like, was it all meticulously planned out beforehand, or did any of it kind of like develop in real time?
It's a little bit of both, actually. And so the ARG we definitely planned out before. That was like the hunt, the scavenger hunt for the skeleton key, which leaked early through that. That was definitely planned before. And the travel brochures that we sent out with links to the album that came out before the record was out, they were shipped out before the record came out. That was planned before as well. There were certain things like, we decided it would be really cool if we made the Dr. Hoomst video live like 24 hours before it actually went up. So we did that. We put it up like a little less than a day before, just like to see if people could find it. And people did. It was really cool. It's just like another little thing that we had added on to the rollout, which was a lot of fun. So there was a couple things that were done in real time, but most of it was planned out before.
For sure. Yeah, that's really cool. And I feel like going back to kind of like just the buzz around it, I feel like the way that Somewhere City, like the whole campaign kind of like grabbed people is, I can't really think of anything recently. The closest thing I can think of recently to that would be like Bayside earlier this year when they put out their album. They did like, it was either like a 2 or 4 week kind of turnaround time. But I feel like, and I think it did a good job with kind of like getting people excited and keeping them paying attention to everything. But I feel like just like kind of the immersive aspects of the Somewhere City rollout, I feel like, and I don't know how long exactly was the rollout, because I feel like it was even longer than Baysides, but had people even more like involved in it in a way.
Yeah, so I think we started the hunt for Skeleton Key and like the website claims of the travel information guides. That was about, that was pretty much a month and change before the album came out. So that was like, I think we started that on like October 12th, maybe a little bit after that. And the single drop October 18th or 19th, drive-through, 24-hour drive-through drop the 19th. Yeah, October 18th. And the full album obviously came out this past Friday on the 15th. So it was around a month, which honestly, I've seen rollouts way longer recently, which is really cool too. But I think we decided early on with the way that we planned to roll this stuff out, it just worked best in that time frame, I guess, like within a month, just with the amount of stuff that we wanted to have, keep building up, keep rolling along. It was cool.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like it was like a really good like amount of time where it felt like it didn't feel like oversaturated or anything. And like I said, I felt like it kept people's attention the whole way through, which was really cool to see that kind of like engagement.
Yeah, thank you.
Today for the mid-show shout-out, I want to spotlight Audio Diction. Through his YouTube channel, Brandon brings the scene to your screen, posting extensive album reviews, full live sets, and an astounding number of interviews highlighting up-and-coming bands from a variety of genres. YouTube isn't typically my format of choice, but IO Addiction is one of the few exceptions, so I hope you check it out.
I wanted to ask, I hope you guys don't feel like you're becoming the Pokemon band and hate it or anything, but...
Oh, no, I actually love it.
But I was curious, I have kind of like messed around a little bit with like ROM hacks before, but I feel like a lot of them have either been in the process of being made when I downloaded them and had like just crazy expectations, or they kind of took a little bit of a long way to get going. So I'm curious, what is kind of like your favorite, one of your favorite ROM hacks, and what's like the draw of it for you?
Okay. My favorite ROM hack is a pretty popular one amongst people, is Pokemon Light Platinum. I don't know if you've ever played that ROM hack. It's so sick. It's basically, it is its own story in that it doesn't try to do too much with being different. Like, the ROM hack idea is not like, oh, this is completely different. It's not like Fakemon. It's not any like new stuff like that. It's a story using all the existing legendaries up to Gen 5 put into a Gen 3 game, which is really cool. It kind of tells the story of a kid who his dad was like linked to Arceus, I guess. And it sort of follows a different like history of creation of the whole universe. I don't know. It's really sick, the like amount of detail that they went in with the legendaries. But there's a ton of legendaries in the game. They have this cool thing where you can end up getting all of the starters. Not all the starters. You can pick a starter from each generation as you go through the game.
Oh, rad.
After you beat the Elite Four, there is another region you can travel to. You can get another 8 badges. You can battle another Elite Four. And I think there's even another region after that. Like, it's jam-packed with gameplay. I don't know if it's technically finished, but I remember being like 11 years old, maybe 12, in sixth grade on my dad's old laptop for work, and like getting a Game Boy emulator and playing that and like being absolutely mesmerized. I played it a couple years ago too, and it's still just as good. Light Platinum is like the one for me. There's this other one called Pokemon Naranja. It's in Spanish, but I played it. It's really sick. It's about like the Orange Islands, which is sick. It kind of follows the animated show's Orange Island sequence. There is Pokemon Ash Gray, which follows Ash's Indigo League stuff. That's always neat because you never really get that in the games. There's, I know Pat really likes Fire Red Omega, which is just like a super beefed up version of Fire Red with like, I don't know, it's harder.
Gotcha.
Like, he's always like, yeah, games are too easy. I'm like, okay, you know. But I feel that too. I played those ones too. They're really sick.
I was waiting, hoping that Santa would get me Sword or Shield for Christmas. So I decided to start playing through Ultra Sun. Because I think after like Generation 3, I kind of like fell a little bit off the wagon and stuff. But I'm like over 16 hours in. And I think I'm on like the second island on Ultra Sun.
Ultra Sun. Yeah, I've actually never played the Ultra versions of the Gen 7 games. I've heard that they're better than the original ones, though. Yeah, it's cool. I don't have a Switch, so I'm not doing Sword or Shield yet. Hopefully at some point I'll be able to like buy one, but I don't know. It's not fiscally responsible for me right now.
I feel yeah. You should follow the R Nintendo Switch Deals subreddit, because I actually got there's like some weird, like, I think it's called, I don't know, I think it's called like the Daily Steal or something. It's like through the Facebook Marketplace, but I ended up getting a copy of Sword for $40.
Oh, nice.
And it just came out a week ago. So like, and it should be here, I think it should be here on Saturday or something. I'm like so stoked for it.
Yeah, the gameplay that I've seen so far looks really, really cool. I was just hanging out with Tyler from Stars Hollow. He has it. He was like, it's super good. So I'm awaiting the day that I'll get to play it. But I've never been the type of person who's like, I need to have this on release.
Yeah, same.
I can wait a bit for the game, let my friends play it first, tell me how great it is, and then hopefully it doesn't let down my expectations.
For sure, yeah. And I always like to kind of like finish up the interviews by asking for either just like a piece of advice or like an observation or kind of like philosophical idea or whatever that you've had recently, either about like music or life in general?
Oh, wow. Okay. I thought of something the other night, but it sucked. But I was hanging out with my friends the other night, and I was just thinking about how weird is it that we get sick? Like, that's, I don't know. I thought about that for way too long, and I was like, that sucks. But that's an awful one. Let me think of one for real. Oh, my God. Okay. I'm going to think about this for a second so that I don't say something dumb and regret it.
And also, I'm just going to say, it's weird that we get sick, but I feel like it's equally as weird that we can get healthy again.
Isn't that even weirder?
Yeah.
Well, I was just thinking, it's like, it's so random. Like, I could just wake up sick because of some shit that happened, and I'll be sick for a couple days. And that just happens sometimes. And I thought about that way too hard, and I was like, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. So I'm pretty sure we're living in a simulation. Anyway, philosophical idea, maybe, about life. I don't know. As far as life goes, I like to really embrace the people around me with love and support and just try to help my communities be the best that they can be. And music is probably one that I could shed some more philosophical light on. I don't know. I think music is so weird because we're at a point right now where it's like there's so much good music being made. And I think that there's a lot of people that are like discouraged kind of maybe from like starting it. But I definitely felt in that same boat before Origami Angel started. And I think everyone should just try to play an instrument at some point in their life and not even make it about being great. Make it about being fun, because that's definitely why I started playing music. And it's why I continue to play music, is that it's fun as hell for me. It's like definitely the most important part of my life. And I don't know, it's made me a ton of friends and a ton of really cool opportunities and a lot of, I don't know, it helps me think about things differently too. And I don't know, that's my philosophical thing. I think everybody should at least try to learn an instrument at some point in their life, because it's a lot of fun.
For sure, yeah. I feel like there's been kind of like, in the last like year or so, kind of a big push to just kind of be like, you know, everyone can do this, anyone could do this, just, you know, just go for it. Even if it doesn't end up turning into a band or anything, like you can just chill and noodle on a guitar at home.
Exactly. I think it's super cool that like that is like a mindset that more and more people are getting into, because that's the way it should be. That's how all great art is created. It's not created out of people being like, oh, I'm gonna be Picasso too, Electric Boogaloo. Like I don't know. If you love something and put passion to it, or even if you just, you know, find a fun thing, a fun hobby in playing guitar and stuff like that, you are totally gonna be like, that was a great decision. You're not gonna regret it, learning any instrument. Unless you do, but then it's not on me, you know?
All right, there you go. I hope you enjoyed this trip through Somewhere City. And remember, you're welcome back anytime simply by playing the record. Thank you so much to Rylan for being a pleasure to talk to. Oh, and a happy update to the Pokemon discussion. It was gifted a Nintendo Switch Lite and Pokemon Shield by Lex at Chatterbot and some other friends. Sword and Shield definitely get a high recommendation from me, but even they don't blow me away as much as Somewhere City. If you haven't already, please go and give it a play as soon as possible. Check back in on Monday for a hint at next week's guest, another one I'm highly excited for. A special thank you as always to The Alternative for helping to promote the show, Kaylin West of Tiny Stills for the theme song, and Michaela Jane Palermo for the artwork. You can keep up to date by subscribing to the podcast and following the show on Twitter and Instagram at FlyOnTheCallPod. Feel free to email any questions, comments, or other feedback to me at FlyOnTheCallPod@gmail.com. Now go out there and catch them all.
Hey, this is Dewey Halpas, host of Peer Pleasure on the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Join me each week as I explore another long-form conversation with one of your favorite musicians, actors, comedians, or creatives. From Chino Moreno of the Deftones, John Gorley of Portugal the Man, to Fat Mike from NoFX and Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat, we go all over the map. From Fall Out Boy to Slayer, Peer Pleasure has it all. Check us out now on Sound Talent Media.